This is the third session, but tape number four, with Johnny Cameron, recorded on April 24th, 1991, in Johnny Cameron's home. This begins with the year 1966 and the beginning of Welfare Rights, the national organization. Sherlock Luck interviewing.
I was a minister from, I think, the Church of Christ. And I remember him doing a conversation with me and one with George at separate times.
And I think they wrote the wrong journal. I'm going to have to look it up a different way. I'll find it and get they put the Journal of Social Issues, and that's not the one it was in. I looked and looked and looked for 2 years on each side of what they said.
Journal of Social Issues? This came out in one of their books, in one of the church books.
Oh.
That's what it was in. It was in United Church of Christ. I think that's Jehovah Birch, B-I-R-C-H.
Okay.
Hobie? Yeah, we call him Hobie. I think his name is Hobie.
Okay. Mm. Okay. Well, that'll help. I could check.
I think he was a church, but one of their books is belonged to the United Church of Christ. I believe that's what it was. But that's who Hobie was involved with. But I'd like to have a copy of that. But my stuff, when I got ready to move from Washington back here, this woman was supposed to be keeping my stuff, and they'll ship it to me, and they never did. I had furniture and books, but I had a good 2,000 hours of books and different things. And pictures and stuff that they never sent it to me. But I think that might be what Gita is talking about.
Once I know, now that I have his name, I should be able to find it.
Yeah, and the church with the United, I think he was with the United Church of Christ.
Okay, I'll see if it's in the library under his name is one way of looking for it.
He might get in touch with the church because they have a congregation here, United Church of Christ, and they probably could tell you that. I'd like to get a copy of that myself. I remember it had a conversation with Johnny Tillman and a conversation with George Wiley.
Okay.
He did them both in there at separate times. Mm.
All right. Well, I'll look that in the library.
Do you remember what she said about it?
Okay.
Uh-huh. Well, that was when I was still the chairwoman, because I left the chair July 1971.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Johnny, what I want to do, here's my plan, because I've been looking at my schedule. One of the things I thought we could do, there's a specific issue I want to focus on today, starting from 66, but not do, like, I've got this whole chronology of, conferences and demonstrations and meetings with HEW and all of that, and I want to get your descriptions of each of those things. So that's going to take a lot of time, right?
Yeah, it's going to take a lot of memory, too.
Right. So what I want to do today, though, is focus on the question that will be helpful for my seminar, for my students, and that is how you got from where you were in 66 in terms of your ideas about women to where you write the welfare is a women's issue and that women's liberation is a necessity for poor women. And that whole question and tracing the conflict, which from everything I've looked at so far seems like it was from the very beginning, from 69, the conflict between the recipient women and the male organizers over, maybe you don't have the same assessment, but among other things, what Gita West talks about is that the men were pushing jobs for men but welfare for women, and saying that the big thing is to put the black man at the head of the black family again, and the women were heads of families and they wanted the jobs. So I wanted to trace that whole controversy in your own, the development of your own thinking about women and women's liberation.
You mean what organizers? Our organizers? Except, oh no. Except, now in our state, in California, we didn't have organizers. All our organizing was done by us here in this state.
Mm-hmm.
We never had paid organizers, except maybe groups. Individual groups in given cities or counties may have had somebody to give them an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Or they may have been like the poverty program. They may have had welfare recipient units within those programs that became organized. But when we got them, these people, we didn't see any organizers. They were women who were the organizers, and most to 99% of them were non-paid. They were just recipients like I was, who saw the need and was trying to do something about it. In other states, we had a big organization in Massachusetts, around in Boston and the places, around furniture campaign, because that's what their issue was at the time. They didn't have furniture. They weren't allowed furniture in the checks. At that time, Los Angeles County, especially in this state, people could get what they needed, the bed, stoves, refrigerators, and what have you, because they cut it out later. But at that particular time, we did not have that problem. If we didn't have furniture, we got some furniture orders to go get. In Massachusetts, they did not have that. So that was an issue that they organized around, but they had an organizer whose name was Bill Patrick, who was white.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our main organizers, regardless to where they were white.
And men,
folk.
Weren't they?
And men, yeah. They were male white organizers. Very few black ones. Very few black people participated in our operation at all.
At the national level,
yeah.
Well, that seemed to be an ongoing conflict even by 69.
Well, I wouldn't call it a conflict. It wasn't women organizers versus men organizers, or it wasn't white organizers versus black organizers. We had a few, most of those kids were college kids who were rich. None of them was poor.
Mm-hmm.
Middle class, upper class, whatever it was. We had a few, wasn't too many, I almost count them by name, of black people who participated. And I don't remember, I said Bruce Thomas was one of our main mobilizers, and Bruce was black. And then we had a kid from up in New York, one of Hope James. We had another kid, Gary's in San Francisco, now I forget his name. He was black. Now let's tell the truth. That was about Andrew, I can't remember his name, down in Virginia, was black. But the majority of the organizers were white male.
Was there no conflict between the notion that these white males, mainly kids, who weren't poor, were getting paid to organize, and the black, the mainly black women.
But they weren't getting paid. Mm. Not in our operation. Most of those kids had their own money. They were volunteers. Uh-huh. Very few of them got paid. George Wilder didn't want to pay nobody. What color you were? To tell you the truth, George took very little money himself. His wife was working.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how she finally gave it up and gave him up too, you mm-hmm. know. But,
Well, I have a sense that he started to play around a little there, too.
No, but he didn't. He wasn't interested in playing around. He could have played around plenty. Now, that's one thing I can say about him. I knew a lot of his business, and I knew a lot of folks was after him. But if he wasn't talking about organizing and giving some money to welfare rights, he just wasn't talking to George. Now, that's the kind of person George was. He was really sincere about what he was doing. And you got to understand, though, he was a black man, very educated man. But he didn't use his education as a whooping stick over people.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have that problem with George. I don't know if I would have gone with anybody like George. He was a different kind of person I ever seen. You know, he really was. To look at him, you when it comes to, except for he used the correct language, he tried to, we finally broke him in that, so he started speaking just like we did. He was not a dressy kind of person. We used to get on him ourselves about how he dressed. Not was he trying to identify by having on. He just wasn't into that kind of thing. I remember fighting with George already in New York by getting a new suit. We was going to this fabulous house on Park Avenue, and they was having a fundraiser for us. And George wanted to wear his funny kind of shoes that somebody made him when he was in court, when he used to do a lot of marching. Pants dropped down, dashiki on, going to these folks' fancy house to talk to people about money. So somebody had given a little donation, I guess $20,000 or something like that. So I said, George, then you got enough money, he would, when the money come in, if you've been here, say, okay, what do you need for rent? You need some money for rent. What's my rent do? Here's the rent, here's your food. That's where they got paid.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to him, you got enough in here, you give your staff, the people are here, then you got enough, at least buy you a couple of suits, clothes. Because I said, even though we poor, we can have you run around with us be like this, because we don't look like this. You know, we might not have one dress, but we're going to be kings, right? George went somewhere when I saw him that night at the fundraiser. He had his suit on, and his tie, and he said, I like my suit. I said, well, it looks nice. He said, how many did you get? That suit couldn't cost no more than $60, $69. It was a nice suit. He could at least got two of them. How many did you get, George? Oh, I just got one. I said, one suit, you plan to wear this everywhere you go? And he's asking these people, this lady had invited some of her rich friends in. We need to talk about what we're doing and that kind of stuff. So they put some money, and we had a hard time getting him to put these shoes and socks on. And then by the time night was gone, he had to put some other shoes on with the suit. You know, he was just that kind of person. So it wasn't about no money.
Yeah.
The women in Massachusetts, now they love Bill Pastrick. And those women, I talked to one of them when I was back in Boston September. A lot of them now, they don't have kids anymore, so they work in or retired or whatever have you. But they like Bill Pastrick, that was his name. The people down in Virginia, and that was the largest state Southern Organized State of Welfare.
Yes, please. I don't know who that is.
I was at the state of Virginia, which was considered a southern state. We had welfare rights cut up in four regions. We had the eastern region, western region, the southern region, and what we call central region. So the New York, Massachusetts, and those things, that's what you call eastern region. The southern region, you had Virginia and Louisiana, Arkansas, Texas, those kind of folks. Virginia had the largest statewide organization in the South. And it was organized by somebody named, God, I can see him now. Bill Perkins. He was right. Bill had some folk working with him, though. Tyrone Chapman, who's black. Chuck Hatton also was black. But Bill kind of led the whole, put the whole coalition together. We lost Tyrone in a car accident. He got killed a few years back. That organization was both white and black. Leadership was mixed. Their chairman was Roy Hoffman, who was an amputee, I believe it was. Then he had a counterpart, I can't remember his name, it was from up in... I don't remember what his name was, but they were both white. But the girl from Newport News was black, and I still talk to her a lot. But they had a big statewide organization, and it was multiracial. But, as I said, the leadership, organizing leadership was provided. And usually, people like Phil Perkins or Bill Pass would probably raise their own money if they got any money.
Well, what about the fact that one of the things that she brings up is, I mean, here you have mainly women as the recipient, but men who were both running the show and coming or designing programs, even though they had to come to the elected board. Was there conflict over, or maybe we should go back.
But see, we weren't, see, as I told you earlier, we went into a women versus man situation. Our thing was recipient versus the establishment and what the attitude was for recipients and how they felt. It wasn't necessarily men, because most women that I talked to had less problem around their male social workers than they do the women social workers. So that's the way that went down. If you look at the total situation, the head of HEW was a male, except, what's her name, Mary? Somebody, she died. She had a certain portion that we talked to her before we got to John Gardner at that time. I can't remember, Mary Switzer was in a department. That's the way you get started. But her boss was John Gardner, who was a male. 99% of the legislators who create the stuff were males.
Mm-hmm.
We had one woman there at that time, Shirley Chisholm.
Mm-hmm.
That was about the size of it.
Right.
So we had to deal with men regardless. We had one male on our board. We had two all together. First one was there for a while, and he was old and didn't participate very long. And then we had our regional representative, Faith Evans, who later became my associate, was male. But they were also a recipient and was a father. They had children and had that kind of experience. So from Jump Street It wasn't a woman, a female versus male situation in the first place. So I don't think recipients themselves really had any problem with it. If they had any problem, sometimes they had some drag outs with the male organizers, because sometimes the male organizers got involved with other people, other women in the thing, because you had that kind of thing. I guess you had that and everything. But I don't remember anybody ever bringing it to our attention.
Well, one of the things she talks about, the women, and you especially, always advocated that women should be trained and get jobs.
Jobs in what?
To be able to
be organizer?
No. In general. To be able to get decent jobs.
Yes.
And one of the things that she talks about is that Wiley and these male organizers, but we're focusing on jobs for men and welfare for the women.
No. George never brought that to us. George, matter of fact, George didn't think women should work anyway. George really felt that it should put some more money into checking people work if they wanted to. We used to have a lot of disagreements about that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
you know, we used to have some disagreements about that because I didn't feel that you use welfare for whatever you need it till you can do better.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I done.
Yeah.
A lot of other ladies do the same thing. I don't believe that people who use the welfare and the people within the organization, once they get the jobs, I don't think they should forget from whence they came and forget about the movement altogether, because there are other people who want to come along like you did. And I didn't, but a lot of them have. And that's really what happened to the organization in the end. And people, once they got from A to Z, they were through. Once they got from A to B, they were through with E, you know, that kind of stuff. So,
what was his thinking on this?
George never advocated, but he didn't do a lot of pushing for no job thing. He really felt that people should go get welfare if you want it, welfare if you need it, and be treated like human beings regardless to what you were or how poor you were. You're supposed to be treated with respect. And as you notice, did she talk about in there about the piece of legislation we had, $6,500 for a family of four?
$6,500
for a family of four. We wasn't talking about work. We were talking about they people should have that much money, at least for what the government said was the poverty line. Didn't matter whether you were working or not.
But you were advocating training and women being able to work.
Right.
And
get welfare. You need it. I still advocate that.
Now, but he, did you have conflicts with him over this issue?
Only personally. He said him talking like me and you. Yeah.
Why would he maintain, why wouldn't he support your position? Did he think women should stay in the home and take care of the
children? He felt like if that's what they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't that kind either, because his wife didn't stay at home.
Right.
She was, if she hadn't been for him, I don't know what we'd have done running for her, you know. But I don't remember him ever advocating no jobs for no men and well for no women. I don't, unless he did that to Yuta. You know, she had a good relationship with him, but he never did it to me. He never talked to me about no stuff like that.
Because he apparently, according to her book, and this was later in 71, he went to a NOW meeting. Said that. And that just...
Wait a minute. I remember that.
You remember that?
Yes. They had to throw him out of that. That was done in Washington, D.C. They weren't going to I think they were trying to keep him from speaking. They didn't want him to speak or something, but he went anyway. I remember him doing that. We were in Washington, D.C., and he got up, and they were some of them mad with him when he got through with him. I remember that real well. I guess he was there, but because I was there. And matter of fact, I was sitting at the front table.
Yeah. How did you feel about that kind of position?
I don't know. I think George did that to the women on purpose. I think that's what, because I remember, it looked like they didn't want him to speak. But he came anyway. And got involved. But I remember him talking about it. His words were the epiphany pants or something like that. But anyway, he did that to them on purpose that day. You know. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you one question. Let's go back to your emerging as a leader starting in 66.
As a leader?
Well, you know, first election, Johnny.
I have never identified myself as a leader.
Well, you were.
Well, if that's what leader is, I guess that's what I am. But that's not what I don't call myself a leader. I call myself an advocate.
I think
but not a leader. Yeah. But 66, what happened with you?
Yeah, but let me ask you one other thing. We'll get back to it later. But by 71, when you wrote that piece. 72, when you write a piece saying women's liberation is a necessity for poor women, it seemed to me that you were making a very clear statement as what anyone would identify as a feminist then.
Okay.